Welcome to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. It's good to have you back. Hope you're having a good week. And today we have as a guest Dr. Jeffrey Gurian, who is a bit of a renaissance man, a former cosmetic dentist and clinical professor of oral medicine, and past president of the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy, and author and producer and radio personality. An amazing human being. Welcome to the show, Dr. Gurian.
Thank you so much, Dr. McGee. I was really so much looking forward to doing this with you. We have a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yes, me too.
Yeah, we definitely have a lot of comments. Please, go ahead.
Our listeners are very much interested in learning how to become more loving and lovable, and I think you have a little bit to say about that, don't you?
I have so much to say about it that we'll probably run out of time.
Well, tell us your background and what is your perspective on that?
Okay, well, I have a very different kind of a background. As you mentioned so kindly, it's kind of an eclectic background. I started as a cosmetic dentist, and then I became a clinical professor at NYU in oral medicine and orofacial pain. And 20 years ago, I approached the Association of Spirituality and Psychotherapy so that I can enlighten psychotherapists about the physical symptoms of stress that seem to occur in a lot of people with emotional illness, people that they treat with depression. I believe very strongly, as you do, in a body-mind-spirit approach. And a lot of people don't know that due to stress, many patients with emotional illness clench and grind their teeth. It's called bruxism. And it causes a lot of physical symptoms like migraine-type headaches, facial pain, neck pain, headaches, all kinds of headaches, ear pain, back pain, shoulder pain, amazing things that people would never relate to their jaw. Because if you wake up in the morning and your neck hurts, the last person in the world you would think to tell would be your dentist. You wouldn't even mention it to him that your neck hurts. People take the information available to them, and they make up an excuse that makes sense to them. So if they wake up in the morning and their neck hurts, they tell themselves, well, their pillow is no good, the mattress is no good, they slept in a funny position, because you can't know what you don't know. So they don't wake up in the morning and say, you know what, my splenius capitis muscles are sore. It must be my temporomandibular joint. So I approached the Association of Spirituality and Psychotherapy, and I told them about my work treating dental patients with emotional illness who are experiencing a lot of physical symptoms. And they accepted my work. They thought that it was really great. And I'm very involved in 12-step work for many years. And I understand the power of spirituality. And I was able to bring that into the dental field, which is very interesting even to me. I'm currently lecturing at Temple University School of Dentistry. My last lecture is tomorrow, as a matter of fact, at the request of the dean. And I'm lecturing to the doctors and the alumni on how to change your mindset from frustrating to enjoyable and from hate to love. Which I never thought would happen in a million years. I graduated from that school a long time ago, and the culture was very different, and they didn't treat the students well. And for me, it was basically a nightmare of 4 years. It was like a four-year fraternity hazing. And about 6 months ago, the dean reached out to me. He had read about me on the Internet because I'm one of the few doctors that has a long-standing career in the comedy world, and I've worked with comedy legends, like going back to Milton Berle, who was my sponsor in the Friars Club, and people like Jerry Lewis and Rodney Dangerfield and Joan Rivers. I got to write for all these legendary comedians before I started performing comedy myself. So I used humor in my work, and I developed this body-mind-spirit approach to treating stress-related illness. And I call it STAR therapy, which is the name of the lecture that I'm actually doing tomorrow at Temple University. And STAR therapy is an acronym that stands for Spiritual Transformational Affirmative Resonance Therapy. And the resonance refers to music, because I use music in my work. It refers to my voice, because I talk the whole time. It's like a guided meditation in a sense. But what it mostly refers to is a truth. When people are emotionally ill, very often they're living in the past and they're beating themselves up thinking what they should have done and what they could have done and what they could have said, and they're living in fear about the future. But in the meantime, they're losing the now, they're losing today, and it feels like their whole life is rushing by and they're not getting anything done. And so the resonance part is very important, because I have a saying that says, you can't get better with the same mind that got you sick in the first place. You already know your own thoughts. And if your thoughts have not been working for you, then you need new thoughts. And those new thoughts are spiritual wisdom, a different way of approaching life. So, for instance, if you're trying to get something in life, but no matter what you do, you can't seem to make it happen, you're not supposed to think that you're the ultimate victim of the universe and that nothing ever works out for you. The spiritual perspective is that you didn't get what you thought you wanted because, first of all, it wasn't God's will for you. And second of all, if you got what you thought you wanted, you wouldn't be available for the really good thing that's coming to you. And you have to have patience, which is a problem for people. Human beings, we tend to lack patience. We want everything that we want now. And we tend to blame ourselves when things go wrong. So one of the things that I always emphasize is the essence of spirituality and the difference between that and religion. Because religion can be wonderful for people, but it tends to divide us by putting us into a category. And spirituality brings us all together, because all it asks is that you believe in the power greater than yourself. And I know these concepts are very familiar to you with your work with addiction and, you know, people in recovery. You can call it nature or the universe or God, whatever is comfortable for you, as long as you know that it isn't you. Because when you think that you're running your own life, then you tend to blame yourself when things don't go the way you would like them to. So that's the resonance part of star therapy. The A for affirmation is because I use affirmation to change the way people think. It's almost like a self-hypnosis. I used it on myself to cure myself of a severe stutter. I stuttered very badly through my 20s and beyond, even into my 30s. I could never say my name. I could never say Gurion, Jeffrey Gurion. Most stutterers have a hard time saying their name. And I realized one day that I didn't stutter when I was alone. I only stuttered when I was trying to talk to somebody else. And I consider that grace. I was given the grace to figure out that you can't have a disability based on your location. If a man has a limp, he limps in every room of his house. You can't go into a room alone, close the door, and walk perfectly. But if I could speak fine when I was alone, then theoretically it means there's nothing wrong with me. I created a false disability for myself. And I knew I wanted to be a doctor, and I knew that patients don't feel, you know, it doesn't exude an air of confidence when you're stuttering. Nobody looks at a stutter and says, what a calm, confident man, you know. So I worked on myself literally for years to develop techniques of changing of thought, which is also a lot about my work and my book. And the T part, the transformational part, is because when you do this with people, the body, mind, spirit approach, it works fairly quickly. You can undo years of pain that people are holding inside. And I call them heart wounds. And that was my first book in the happiness series. It's called Healing Your Heart by Changing Your Mind, a spiritual and humorous approach to achieving happiness. And it's about releasing the heart wounds that we begin to accumulate as children. Every time someone hurts you or breaks a promise to you, or breaks up with you in a relationship, insults you, hurts you in some way, we're all more sensitive than we like to think, and we keep that inside in our heart chakra, and I call them heart wounds. And it's important that we release those heart wounds in order to achieve happiness. So that is a very, very long answer to your question, and I'm sorry that I haven't even let you break in, but if you have things that you want to say, please feel free, because I could just go on and on about it. It's a topic that I love so much.
You know, this is, it's all wonderful, and I really appreciate all of your wisdom. And you have been through a personal journey of transformation. I'm really interested in your work with people in terms of helping them to release their heart wounds. I love that terminology for that. I use the term love wound, but I think heart wound is a very, very good term. And there is sort of a profound need to release the pain of that. How do you help people to do that, Dr. Guerin?
Well, it's kind of a lengthy but a very fascinating process. I use almost the same thing when I work with stutterers. I have a very long questionnaire that I have them fill out before I start working with them. And it has to do with everything in their life. I work a lot with cellular memory. And on a very simple level, cellular memory, for those people who don't know, is that every single thing you've experienced since you're born is still inside of you. Everything that you've experienced in your senses is still inside of you. We're like big video recorders, in a sense. So it's the reason why you can hear a song you like, and it'll remind you of the boy or girl you liked in the third grade. Or you smell a perfume, and you're like, oh, my kindergarten teacher wore that perfume. And it takes you back. It's like a sensory deja vu. There's no thought involved. It automatically takes you back. Well, during the day, things happen to us. People pass by. We see things that we don't even realize that they act as triggers. Because unfortunately, traumatic events are more deeply ingrained in our consciousness than happy events. There's this silly saying that they teach us when we're children. It says, sticks and stones can break your bones, but words will never harm you, which is the furthest from the truth. I don't know why they tell children that, because all the bruises you got as a child healed up a long time ago. But every single one of us can remember something that someone said that hurt our feelings in some way, and we keep those things inside of us. And so because knowledge is power, what I do is I go over people's complete lives with them to find out. It's not enough to just treat somebody with a body and mind approach, to give somebody medication or to just have them talk to a psychotherapist, but it's also important to treat them on a spiritual level and give them back their hope, because a lot of people who are depressed, they feel hopeless. They lose their hope, especially with what we're living with now. You know, in March, I had COVID double pneumonia, and I was in the hospital, and I was really... I had never been so sick in my life. I made sure to get it in March because I like to do things right away. You know, I didn't want to wait. I wanted to be the first, you know. So I was sick for 2 weeks before I called an ambulance because I also have a heart condition, and I was in a high-risk category, and I was afraid to go to the hospital. And after 2 weeks, I had no choice. I myself was losing hope. I didn't know how to handle the pain anymore. Fever, nausea from morning to night, full body pain. My chills were so bad in the hospital, they had to cover me with 4 blankets to keep my body from shaking. And after 2 days in isolation, when I got there, by the way, it was a time when New York was being overrun with cases. They were putting people in the hallways already. And they put me in the emergency room next to a woman who was screaming, and I had to use the principles that I write about in order to keep myself in a positive frame of mind, because my first impulse was to feel sorry for myself. How can they put me next to a woman? She's literally screaming with every exhalation, and I had to step outside of my body and my mind and think about her and think about how much pain she must have been and how scared she must be, in order to step outside of myself, because I realized that if I'm in a negative space, my immune system is not going to function as well. My vibration is going to drop. My circulatory system was collapsing. People know normal blood pressure, they say, is 120 over 80. My 80 had dropped to 42. So it was even hard for them to get me in to start an IV. And I was in isolation for 2 days. They were actually considering sending me home. But when they found out that I had COVID double pneumonia and I told them about my heart history, they decided to keep me. They put me in isolation, and on the third day, They moved me to a room with three other very sick men, all with the virus. And I don't know if they were kidding or not, but they told me the man in the bed next to me was from Wuhan, China, of all places. And this poor man, he was an elderly man who didn't speak English, and he was choking and coughing into the air, and I was laying right next to him. And again, I had to use the principles that I write about, because it's not enough to just walk the walk. You have to talk the talk. No, I said it in reverse. It's not enough to talk the talk. You have to walk the walk. And so I had to tell myself, you know, there's a tendency to ask, why me, when these things happen to you? And I had to flip that thought and say, well, why not me? Whoever promised that my life is supposed to be perfect? And I started thinking of humorous things, and I was joking with the nurses, who were only allowed in one at a time because it was still highly isolated. But this poor guy, you know, I wind up next to a guy who they tell me is from Wuhan, and the nurse says to me, don't worry, there's a curtain between you. And I say, yeah, sure. Everyone knows the way to block out a deadly virus is to hang a thin curtain there. So when they said they were going to send me home after 4 days, I didn't argue. I was so happy to get out. But you talk a lot about kindness, and I want to mention that. When the ambulance crew came to pick me up, the ambulance, they were dressed in hazmat suits, and all masked, and it was kind of scary. And one of the ambulance workers took my hand, and he said to me, don't worry, you're going to be okay. And that was the first act of kindness that I felt really helped me to survive. When I got to the hospital, the people were very, very kind. And because I had been a regular on Sirius XM radio, the host of a very big comedy show announced on the radio that I was in the hospital and very sick. And I started getting hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of messages from listeners and from fans and from people in the comedy world that were sending me good wishes. And I was too sick to answer, but I'm a very big believer in the power of prayer and the power of thought. And I can't tell you how much that helped me, just knowing that many people were focusing their energy on me. And I got messages from famous comedians like Bill Burr and Nick Kroll and John Mulaney and Jim Norton. People took the time out of their day to send me very caring messages. I was sick for about 2 months when I got home, but during that time is when I wrote my newest book on happiness called Fight the Fear, Overcoming Obstacles That Stand in Your Way, because I had to do a lot of fighting the fear. And I've been fighting the fear my whole life, to be honest with you. For some reason, even though I was brought up in a very loving and supporting family, I've always had a lot of fears, and I've been confronting them all my life because fear is a bully, and fear doesn't want you to accomplish anything, and fear wants you to stay at home in bed with the covers over your head, and I refuse to do that. So I confronted fear to stop stuttering. I confront fears of traveling. Last October, I made myself go to Japan all by myself because it was the scariest thing I could think of to do. And I was literally, I was lost every day in Japan. I was lost on the subways, but I got by with my limited Japanese, and there were times that I was actually losing it. I was caught up in the fear because I was stuck underground for more than an hour. Their subway systems are very complicated, and I had to remind myself all the time, it's going to be okay. Some genius taught me years ago that when you pray, you say, please release me from the fear. And that's what I did, and it helped me to get through so many different situations. So I look forward to your next question, because as you can see, I talk a lot.
No, I love that you have that gift. You know, there's so much to talk about here, Dr. Gurian, and so much that you've raised. You know, we're going to take a break here very shortly, but what I'd love to do is come back a little bit to what you said about releasing heart wounds and going back and reviewing life and cellular memory, and I think there's a lot of wisdom and power in your intuition about that. And then maybe from then we can move on to talking about releasing fear, which is something that you also inspire us with. So let's take a brief break. You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike, with our guest Dr. Jeffrey Gurian, who has written a number of books. Most recent one on basically fear and on how to transcend and fear. So we'll be back right after this break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike, Dr. Michael McGee here, your host, with our guest, Dr. Jeffrey Gurian. Welcome back, Jeffrey.
Thanks so much, Dr. Mike. I'm really excited to be on with you today. I've been looking forward to
this. Oh, it's great to have you.
Thank you.
You know, there's a lot of wisdom that I'd like to dig deeper in with you, Jeffrey, on this releasing of heart wounds. It's so powerful and important to heal our heart wounds, to come to a place where we are truly feeling lovable and loving, and really maybe that's the first step. And you talked a little bit about doing a life questionnaire and working with cellular memory, and I'm imagining what you're saying in that, Jeffrey, is really, really unearthing and making conscious as much as possible the pain, the hurts, and the pain. And when those become conscious and you're working with people, you talk about releasing those heart wounds or the pain of our prior wounds. How do you recommend people go through that releasing process?
Well, first of all, I should say, like, I'm not limited by training. So, like, it was very interesting to me. When I joined the board of the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy, their training is very different than mine. Everything I do is about touch. As a dentist, it's one of the few fields where we're actually holding people's heads. It's a very intimate profession. You're working inside of someone. As opposed to a psychotherapist, very often you're sitting across from someone. And because my work involves touch, when I'm working with people who have these TMJ symptoms where they're getting terrible headaches and stuff, sometimes I'd have to put my fingers in their mouth to release the muscles that are causing the pain. When we're talking about releasing heart wounds, first of all, there has to be an element of trust. So when I see a patient, very often my first visit could be 3 hours long. Now, this was shocking to the therapist that I worked with in the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy, because most people have sessions that are about 45 minutes long. And I think that's traditional. And I'll see people up for sometimes 3 to 4 hours the first time, especially if they travel far to see me, because I need to share with them. I need them to feel very comfortable telling me things that they've been holding in for years. Because these heart wounds not only affect our self-esteem and our self-confidence, but they affect every decision that you make in your life. Because every time you're called upon to make a decision, you think about what to do. You use your thoughts. Who else's thoughts can you use? But if your decisions are not working for you, it means that many of your thoughts are not valid. And it's very hard to objectively look at your own thoughts. I had to do that to cure myself of stuttering. I was holding thoughts for me that were not valid, that were given to me by people who did not have my best interests at heart. I had a negative mindset about myself, as many people do. So they have to feel comfortable with me. So as I say, I spend hours. After that first 4 hour, 3 to 4 hour visit, the next visit could be 1 to 2 hours. But I don't limit my time with them. I let them spend as much time with me as they need to discuss the painful elements of their lives. And it's not enough to just think about it. When they hear themselves saying it, it has a lot more weight. You know, a lot of people think they know their story, but they've never said it to another human being. So sometimes exposing it to the light takes away the power from it. And understanding how those things that happened to them when they were children, that they had no control over, very often by their own parents who caused a lot of the heart wounds, they had no way of fighting back. They had no way of taking an action against the parent. Children can't do that. So in some cases, they develop stuttering, and in other cases, they develop other things, but they keep these heart wounds inside of them, and it can affect you for your whole life. And so we talk about things like resentment, you know. Resentment is like you taking poison expecting the other person to die. And we talk about things of how important it is to forgive, not to the other person, but to yourself, to free yourself from the burden that you're carrying. And most of the work is cognitive. It's about thought. Thought is very powerful. It's how, you know, as an avocation, I work with stutterers all over the world, and I teach them how not to stutter. Because the spiritual aspect is that we're all the same. If you did something, theoretically, I can do it too. I didn't do magic to cure myself. I unworked my unhealthy thought. Because any thought you create, you can also uncreate. Thought is just energy. And so the fact that I was able to, you know, I created stuttering for myself. It took a lot of time, but I was able to uncreate it. As you see, I no longer stutter, and I use my voice in everything I do. Whether I'm performing on stage or on radio or television, whatever it is, I'm always using my voice. And I think about stuttering every single day. And that has to do with gratitude. You know, that's another thing that people at home have to incorporate into their thinking. Because even if you're depressed, even if your life doesn't feel like it's going right, there must be certain things that you're grateful for. And when you engage in self-pity, it's one of the worst things that you can do for yourself. Because your immune system drops, you're liable to become sicker. It's no accident that a lot of cancer-phobic people wind up developing cancer. You can't focus on too many negative things because you can draw that into your life. So positive thinking is very, very important. And
yes. Yeah. How do we see? It's so interesting. We get so caught up in our beliefs, Jeffrey, and our thoughts. And we're so easily have this vulnerability to believing that what we think is true.
True. Isn't that amazing? But you know what? If you have any intelligence at all, you tend to believe your thoughts. That's what's so interesting. Your intelligence can actually work against you. You know, and because you, especially if you've been able to accomplish things in your life, you tend to think that you thought your way through it. So it's hard to understand that some of your thoughts may not be working for you. And I'm sorry that I interrupted you. Please continue with what you were saying.
No, I think this is so important for all of us to sort of question what it is we believe and think. I was recently hiking with a friend of mine who's a surgeon. And he was telling me about a cardiothoracic surgeon who gave the commencement speech at his graduation from medical school. And this is a world-famous cardiac surgeon who was brilliant and renowned worldwide. He was a Seventh-day Adventist, and he said during his speech that only 140,000 people were going to go to heaven. And we were both struck by how a brilliant man could have a belief like that, and it made me think to myself, Jeffrey, I thought to myself, wow, you know, we are all so vulnerable to having delusions, and the thing is, you're blind to your delusions. How can you, by definition, know what parts of your thinking are delusional?
It's a very difficult thing. As I said, it's very hard to be objective with your own thoughts. You need somebody that you trust who has knowledge that you don't own that can share that with you. That's the kind of work that I do. And you can't look at it egotistically, but I'm sharing spiritual knowledge. There's only so much knowledge available in the world. To say that only 140,000 people will go to heaven, you'd have to be smart enough to know that that sounds ridiculous. You know? Who's that smart that
yeah.
knows the number of people? So as learned as it may be, you know, it's a strange thing. It's a strange thing to say.
Yes. Very, very important point you're making about sharing our truth with somebody that we trust who can help us to look at ourselves. Well, listen, Jeffrey, let's take a little break and come back. We're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike, with our guest, Dr. Jeffrey Gurian. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee here, your host, with our wonderful guest today, Dr. Jeffrey Gurian. Welcome back, Jeffrey.
Thanks so much, Dr. Mike. It's really, really great to be with you. I'm really honored.
It's great to be with you and your wisdom, Mike. You can feel it radiating from you and the wonderful work that you're doing. And, you know, I'm really struck by just the healing power that you evoke in people to trust you because of your heart, to sort of share their truth of their pain. And the automatic kind of almost the automatic healing that it comes from sharing your pain and the truth of who you are with somebody that you trust. And I think that sort of brings to mind, I'm curious what your thoughts are about trust and the kind of sensitivity that you have to be able to receiving people's pain.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought that up. You know, I had a healing center for a while in Manhattan, and I described it as healing on the heart level. When I was only 7 or 8 years old, I already realized that I could take away certain pain from people with my hands. As a little child, I would do it on my sister and myself, and it just came naturally to me. No one ever taught me that. And it's one of the things that opened me up to the concept of past lives. Sometimes little children get gifts, and no one knows whether that's true or not, but I open my mind to all positive possibilities because it's arrogant to say that you know that something isn't true. And so I've used touch all my life to make people calm. You know, animals seem to fall asleep when I hold them. There's some gift that I was given, and I was able to use it. In my practice, I used it for many years. And I like to talk about sensitivity, because I was an extremely sensitive child. And for most of my life, I didn't own my sensitivity as a strength. I looked at it as a weakness, which a lot of people do, especially men. Men are very reluctant to own their sensitivity because we're taught that it's not particularly maybe a masculine thing to feel sensitive. But when you're truly an ultra-sensitive like I am, and I had to learn that, you have no choice. You can't change your basic nature. And so by owning the strength of it, it's helped me to be more effective. Because there was a time in my life, if I was with you and you were sad, I was sadder for you than you were. I overfelt my feelings, which didn't allow me to be effective. It made me withdraw, and it made it seem like I didn't care, when the truth was that I cared too much. I cared more than you did. When I was in practice, one patient in particular, I'll never forget, he said to me, "I think you'd rather hurt yourself than hurt me." And I said, "Yeah, that's true." I would have people come to me to give them injections, anesthetics, before they went to the surgeon, because they would rather me do it, because I developed techniques of painless injections. That was always very important to me. So my sensitivity, it started out being a burden, but I used it as a strength. And I had to learn to overcome. You know, there are a lot of people that take kindness for weakness. You know, that's a very big mistake, because I have a temper. I tend not to lose it a lot, but if I do, people get nervous because they're not used to it, because I'm usually very mild-mannered, and I try to see everybody's point of view. In the kind of work that we've been talking about, using sensitivity, trust is very important, and that's why I spend so much time with people. Because in order for them to be comfortable enough to share with me the pains that they're holding inside, they have to trust me. And it goes both ways, because I share personal things about myself with them, which is the power behind the 12-step programs, as you well know, that you do so much work in that area. You share personal details about yourself with basically strangers, you know, and somehow that helps us to get better. Because people need to know that you identify with them. When I work with stutterers,
it's so true.
I tell them, you know, I tell stutterers, I'm not a speech pathologist, but who would you rather learn from? Somebody that learned from a book, or someone who had the problem and conquered it? Which is not to say that you have to have a heart attack to be a cardiologist. You don't have to have every illness in the world in order to cure it. But when it comes to something emotional or psychological, it helps. If the person understands, if they know what you're feeling. When someone says they're depressed, I know what that's like. I know what it feels like to be catatonic and not to be able to move, to answer the phone. I understand fear. And what I understand is that sometimes God gives you obstacles to overcome so that you can be helpful to other people. Because
Jeffrey, let me interrupt you for a second here,
sure.
Just to say that I really appreciate you brought up something so important here, which is in our culture we are taught to feel ashamed of our pain, ashamed of our sensitivity, and ashamed of our vulnerability. And what you're saying basically is that our sensitivity and our vulnerability are strengths to be honored, and that we really need to value that capacity rather than to be ashamed of it. And I think that's such a really critical and healing message that I want to really thank you for sharing with us. And I also just wanted to, in the service of time, I just want to make sure that our audience knows all about the books that you've written and how to reach you and how to follow you. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work for our audience?
Sure. Okay. I don't mind giving out my email. If people have questions, they can email me at jeffrey@jeffreygurian.com, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, and G-U-R-I-A-N, as in Nancy, jeffrey@jeffreygurian.com. My books are on Amazon. I have 7 books, but 5 of them are about the comedy world. But the last 2 are my happiness series. The first one is Healing Your Heart by Changing Your Mind, A Spiritual and Humorous Approach to Achieving Happiness. It's an e-book, a paperback, and an audio book. And the newest one that just came out, it was a #1 release in medicine and psychology and things like cognitive behavioral therapy, which really meant a lot to me because that's what it's about. It's called Fight the Fear, Overcoming Obstacles That Stand in Your Way. For anybody out there who knows somebody who stutters, I have a stuttering website, stopstutteringnowgurian.com, because stutterers need to know that they can be helped, and people aren't telling them that. And if you like comedy, you can go to comedymatterstv.com, and you'll see interviews with everybody from Jimmy Fallon on down, all my friends in the comedy world. Yeah, and there's a lot to laugh about, and we could all use some laughter. That's for sure. So
yeah.
Somehow I've managed to combine all my fields. I'm not sure how I did it, but I think I did it so that I could be on with you today, Dr. Mike.
Well, let me just say that you are a healing phenomenon of the world, and you are a force of nature, and just a beautiful being that is doing so much good for the world. And just want to thank you so much, Jeffrey, for being on our show and taking some of your very valuable time in sharing that with the world and with our audience. Thank you so much.
Well, my answer to you is that it takes one to know one, Dr. Mike, and it's really my honor. You have a very esteemed background, and I was really thrilled to be on with you. We could have gone on for hours, by the way.
Yes. Well, let's plan on doing that at another time.
I would love to do that. Well, anytime you like, I would love to come back with you. Thank you so much.
Sounds great. Okay.
Have a wonderful
Thank
day.
You so much, Jeffrey. God bless you, and God bless the work that you're doing. You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Stay tuned. I'll be back with our closing segment right after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee here, your host. And if you want to learn more about my work on healing, growth, and transformation, you can visit my website at howtolove.com. Well, really, 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 wasn't that great to hear from Jeffrey Gurian and his inspiration and his work? And I was so inspired by so many things that he said that were just so wise. His ideas about the need to speak the truth of our pain, of our woundedness, in order to heal. That there's literally just the speaking and the sharing and the saying of the truth of our pain that in and of itself is tremendously healing, especially to be able to say it to somebody else who you trust, who can understand and know your pain. The pathway to becoming a loving person is really through this valley of knowing and releasing and speaking our pain, which really brings to the issue of sensitivity. I really appreciated that. When I was young, when I was about 5 years old, I think I first learned about war and about the reality of war. And to my little 5-year-old brain, the idea of people killing each other just seemed so horrific and so inconceivable. How could someone take the life of another person when this life is so incredibly precious? I just didn't understand that. And I remember walking around really sad for a couple of years about that. And I was very acutely aware that I was somehow weird, that wasn't the way that other kids thought or felt. In fact, a lot of the other kids were playing army with their guns and sort of shooting each other. And I really grew up and really related to that sense of being somewhat ashamed or feeling weird or different for that kind of sensitivity. So if you can feel and tap into that kind of sensitivity in yourself, really value it and don't be ashamed of it. And I think the other thing is don't be ashamed of your pain. Really know that that it's okay, and that that pain needs to be named, it needs to be claimed, and it needs to be released to be healed. So very important. I think part of the pain that we struggle with in all of this is shame, and there's so much of a need for self-forgiveness, forgiveness of others, but forgiving of ourselves as well, for the harm that we have caused others, and also the harm that we've caused ourselves. It's amazing. We even feel shame when we hurt ourselves, let alone when we hurt other people. And there's such a need to be able to love other people and to love ourselves to really get to a place of self-forgiveness. It's really important to see that the shame and the self-condemnation and the self-contempt that we experience, the judgment, the criticism that we experience, will really prevent us from being able to lead full and loving lives. You know, as part of getting to a place of self-forgiveness, I think we need to really look at in our stillness practice, in our presence practice, and see the never-ending parade of thoughts and feelings that go on without our choice or decision, without our agency, really. They just happen. Even the urges that come and go within us are not of our choosing. And it's really important to say, you know, what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, the urges I'm having, the beliefs, the thoughts, whatever, this is all not my fault. This is happening. It's a product of my brain. It's not of my agency or choice. And when you do that, when you can take that kind of perspective on your experience, it does create a sense of lightness. You know, we don't cause our faults. We don't choose our flaws. If you fall into addiction, you don't choose to suffer from addiction. These things don't have a self behind them that chose. A blind person doesn't choose to be blind. We just don't choose these things. And when you see that there isn't really a self that's causing your suffering, when you see that your suffering and your pain, your faults, your difficulties, your flaws, when you see that that is all arising as a result of different causes and different conditions that you experience, that is very, very liberating to see that. And it's a releasing of a sense of responsibility and shame. Sure, we're accountable for our actions, absolutely. But even in that, so many of us act automatically with a lack of presence or mindfulness, being driven by the beliefs and thoughts and feelings and urges that we have. So important to let go of blame. So important to let go of blame for what we experience. And with that releasing of blame, a releasing of shame. For example, you know, we may not have had parents that were fully attentive to us. So important to see the causes and conditions of the trauma and wounds that we experience and release the added layers of shame when you realize that it's not your fault for what you think and feel or for your urges. This really, really helps for self-forgiveness. By not being hard on yourself, it frees you up to act more lovingly because it reduces your self-loathing. How difficult it is to have a boundless and open, loving heart towards others and exclude yourself and reserve for yourself self-loathing. It's not possible. It's just not possible. So if you really, truly want to have a life of richness and fullness of loving and being loved, it really needs to start with a reverence for yourself. And the pathway through that is really through deep understanding of how you came to be who you are. And from that understanding to engage in a process of forgiveness. You've got to learn to be with your experience without blaming yourself, to really shift your identity more to the awareness of what is going on inside your wounded brain, inside your hurt brain, and really to some degree that woundedness that exists in all of us, and you are not alone in that. That is something that we all share, either in a tiny degree or to a great degree, depending on the trauma and neglect that we might have experienced. And similarly, you know, in your forgiveness for others, realize that all of us, none of us chooses the causes and conditions that we experience, and none of us chooses the thoughts and feelings and urges that arise in our mind. Sure, we're accountable for our actions, but again, with some compassion and understanding, look back and realize that we all sort of go, oh my God, what was I thinking when I did that? And that there are very powerful forces that really only a process of increasing awareness through, you know, careful observation and attending can really liberate us and give us a greater sense of choice in being able to act in a skillful and loving way. So those are just some thoughts for you on forgiveness and self-forgiveness. I hope this has helped to you. Hope you have a good week of love and lightness and healing and that year we get to have you back with us next week. Until then, be well. And wishing you much love. Dr. Mike here, take care.
Authentic love is universal and unconditional. It is love for both the lovable and unlovable, liberated from toxic ego judgments that reduce and dehumanize. When you deeply understand the forces that drove others to hurt you and you to hurt others, compassion and forgiveness will allow love and bring you joy. Now on howtolove.com, you can learn more about the liberation of loving with Dr. Mike McGee's ebooks on joy, love, and recovery. And there's more ebooks on the way, so visit howtolove.com and put a little joy in your life.
No matter your faults, flaws, and failures, know that you are of immeasurable worth. You deserve to exist and to be happy just like everyone else. No matter what you have done, no matter how others might judge you, you are still sacred and lovable. Learn more at howtolove.com. When you get there, you'll find a wonderful healing blog that discusses all aspects of love, like awakening, recovery, transformation, spirituality, and more. Open up to endless love. Visit howtolove.com right now.
Go to howtolove.com to access wisdom on how to lead a life of love. You'll find articles, blogs, media, and lots more, all to help you learn how to love and let love into your life. If loving and being loved is challenging for you, know that you can learn to love and be loved. Learn more at howtolove.com. You'll even discover information about Dr. Mike McGee and how he can personally guide you to a life of love and even how to get him to speak at your function or group. Visit howtolove.com. Go there now, howtolove.com.
101 Things to Know If You Are Addicted to Painkillers is a new book by Dr. Michael McGee. In this book, Dr. McGee, an addiction psychiatrist, offers helpful information that leads you through all phases of recovery. 101 Things to Know If You Are Addicted to Painkillers helps you know that you can heal and be addiction-free. Get 101 Things to Know If You Are Addicted to Painkillers at Amazon.com.
Radio Your Way, HealthyLife.net.